Live from Petonia, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be in the world. You have stumbled across, or maybe you've been directed at, or you are one of our many fans listening to episode number 7 of the Cinematica Podcast. This is our roundup of reviews, news and opinion about the world of cinema, helping guide you through that Vietnam-like jungle of the latest cinema releases, and it's going to get harder and harder as we get closer to Christmas. So many good films are coming out between now and the new year, and we want you to get the best value out of your cinema dollar and your selections. My name is Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio is
Simon Weary
and Kelly Carruthers,
and we have a special guest here with us in the studio today, John Lee. Welcome to cinematica.co.nz.
It's great to be here.com.
Thank you. We'll be talking to John Lee about some of his film experiences, and he's also a guest reviewer for us this evening, so we'll be talking to him a little bit later on. In today's program, we get in the holiday spirit with Arthur Christmas. Kaylee, she's still recovering from her battle with the Immortals. Simon knows from experience that there really is no rest for the wicked. And we're going to be doing a little bit of gender bending with Celine Sciamma's latest film. That's our one sort of trip to the art house today, actually, Tomboy. And we'll also be chatting to John Lee. He's the star of several Kiwi feature films, including Chunuk Bear and Stickmen and Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. And we'll be chatting with him and covering all of that ground, plus news, other bits and pieces. We've got some competitions, haven't we, Kaylee?
Yes, we do. This week on the show, we are going to be giving away some passes to The Iron Lady, starring Meryl Streep.
And what do we have to do to win?
Well, we, as was posted on Twitter and Facebook, if you sent in one of our favorite two-word reviews, your two-word review will be up for review to win. So that's what we're going to do today in the news section.
And as I discovered today, two-word reviews are really, really hard.
They are. But as we decided earlier this week that conjunctions don't count towards the word counts. You can use and.
And of.
Yes, things like that.
Yeah, and yeah, so you can cheat a tiny weeny bit there. But and our handle, our Twitter handle, for those people that don't know.
Yes, and our Twitter handle is at CinematicaCast. So we're hoping to continue doing some competitions and lure more fans in. So make sure to tweet us your two-word reviews weekly. And if we don't have something to give away, you will get on the show. So fame and fortune are coming.
Indeed. Stay tuned, as the saying goes. And a little bit of follow-up on last week's program. Last week in the news, we mentioned that somebody in Germany has decided that it would be a really good idea to turn Sylvester Stallone's Rocky into a musical. And we were somewhat scornful of that idea, not quite sure how they would be able to do the run up the steps of the Philadelphia Town Hall, etc. But anyway, that's somebody else's problem. But following up on that, I did discover this week that there is an opera version of that beautiful art house hit from the 90s, Il Postino. Do you remember that, Simon?
I do. That's more like it.
That was a big hit, wasn't it? And
yeah.
And Placido Domingo is in the Los Angeles Opera production of that, playing the poet Pablo Neruda. So I'm not sure if that's ever going to make it to the Met Opera season that tours around to New Zealand cinemas, but there may be an opportunity to see that at some point. And also on the WTF stakes, I discovered on YouTube that there is also in Austin, Texas, an Aliens on Ice show, which is a version of the James Cameron classic science fiction movie on ice skates.
So would you take your kids to that?
Yeah.
They have acid for blood. I mean, just burn through the ice, wouldn't you?
Right. Kaylee, today's top five. This weekend's top five. What have our listeners been watching this weekend?
Taxi. You know what? I just want to say it's just great to be here at the best bar in the world.
I'm walking. All right. Coming in at number five, we have In Time. Number four, Contagion. Number three, Arthur Christmas, which we'll be reviewing a little bit later. Number two, Immortals, which we will also be reviewing. And at number one, which we did not approve of last week, is Twilight Breaking Dawn. It is it's still holding on.
It's still going
internationally.
Strong. And we did get a little bit of slightly, possibly the first piece of negative feedback that the show has ever got through social media. Generally, people have been very, very positive about what we're trying to do here.
I told me you were very popular. That's the only reason I agreed to do it.
We are extremely popular. I think it's something like 99% approval rating
with our mums,
with our families. And but we did. David Larson, the film reviewer for the New Zealand Listener, did give us a little bit of a tease for being so negative about Twilight. He felt we should have had somebody on the show who actually got it and might have been able to defend it. So next time around, there is a Breaking Dawn 2, isn't there? Yes. We are going to have to sit through the second half of Twilight Breaking Dawn. So maybe we'll get David onto the show.
So does he get it?
He loves the books. He loves the books. And apparently, if you don't, you know, if you need to be embedded in that world, and then you do get it, and it washes over you like a warm bath.
We did make the comment though that, you know, like a 14, 15 year old young woman would just adore it.
Yeah, that's right. We just don't have anybody on the show.
So is David actually a 14? Because I've seen a photograph of him. I'm sure he's got a beard and he has silver hair.
This is dangerous territory now.
He is listening, so we might just want to haul back real that one.
I'm just asking the question.
I also got some negative feedback from some listeners saying that I should interject more and they want to hear more of me. So.
Is that from the Carruthers family?
No, that's actually from Jackie Doheny of Christchurch, formerly of Vancouver. She's Canadian as well.
All right, so that's just homesickness for the
Canadian connection. They want to hear more
for that weird version of an American accent that you have. Right, what have we got going? I've lost my page here. Where am I? I'm page number two.
Immortals.
Yes. Oh well, and we're going to change the. Changed it around a little bit since I sent the script out.
Right.
Because what I thought we'd do is, because we've already heard his voice and he's been just throwing his two cents in willy-nilly over in the corner of the room, I thought we'd actually introduce our feature guest, New Zealand actorine John Lee. And I've known you, Johnny, for 25 years now.
We've met each other in the Gold Rush, 1886.
Indeed. And you are quite a well-known face on New Zealand television and cinema screens. What was your first feature film?
Well, first feature film would have been Chunuk Bear back in about 91, 1990, maybe it was released.
Yeah, Robert Powell.
Robert Powell was in it. Jesus of Nazareth. Well, my far away.
Yeah, just
I'm coming in now. I'm very intimate. I'm just whispering just to you.
See, now he's too sexy.
Yeah,
we can't compete with that.
I gotta get back here. I'm not very sexy at all. Chunuk Bear, 1991. Dale Bradley directed that, I believe. We shot it out at Avalon, which is not very far from where we. This is a secret location of this bunker.
No, that's right. And Avalon Studio One at Avalon was turned into Gallipoli for the purposes of that particular film. Yeah,
yep,
and
as was Eastbourne
and Macra.
In America, yeah.
Those were the days. So what's changed in the New Zealand film industry? Presumably we're not running up hillsides with rubber bayonets anymore.
Yeah, I got the one good one. I'm trying to get the good one because when you did one of a shaky war, you want a shaky war. But what's changed? Well, one thing I do miss, because it's all digi cams and stuff now, and the red camera is basically just a computer with a lens.
Mm.
So what I do miss is when you're off shot, you know, and you're feeding the other actor, and then you had the very reassuring hum of the film moving through the canister. That used to be very reassuring, but it's not film anymore. It's most films are shot
basically
on digital.
And they often have more than one camera at a time, so you can't really focus on one particular your performance in one through one lens.
Yeah, I mean, crews seem a lot smaller now too, generally speaking, but. It just could be my imagination, or I'm just not very observant. But except for, you know, the stuff that Peter Jackson does, and they have huge crews. So, and I think they probably still shoot on 35 as well.
What was the most recent cinema-bound film that you've worked on?
Probably Insatiable Moon. The Insatiable Moon.
Right. Which was a lovely film.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was a very sweet-natured little film. And it was a real sort of Kiwi battler, wasn't it? Funded independently and distributed independently. And even got as far as, I think they got it screened at cinemas in London as well.
Oh, yeah, all over the world, yeah. There's still a very, there's a blog you can check out, Mike Riddell, who's the writer of the novel that it's based on as well, and the script.
he still has a blog that he keeps up pretty regularly just to let you know how it's all going. So it's a little engine that could, you know?
Yeah.
It really is.
Fantastic. Well, John Lee, welcome to the cinematica.co.nz podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And it's time for us to talk about some of the films that are opened this weekend.
Man roamed these lands. There was a war in heaven. The victors declared themselves gods, while the vanquished were renamed Titans. And forever imprisoned within the bowels of Mount Tartarus. King Hyperion and his legions seek to unleash the Titans and wage war upon this world.
I will end the reign of the gods.
Why so serious?
And a little bit before we went to air, Kaylee said that she didn't have a synopsis for Immortals, and it's a good job that we got one there in that section of the trailer narrated by John Hurt.
Because honestly, watching this movie, I didn't really know what was going on. I was a bit lost.
Did you make it through it?
I did. I fell asleep through one part, and then it was woken up, and and it was so loud. It was so insanely loud because we're at the Titan XC, and my man friend, who I went with on a date on a Friday night.
That's another story.
Is that the right description?
Don't work a wow wow.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like.
Hello, ladies.
Yes. It was actually the end, the last part of the film after I was woken up was so loud that I had to plug my ears, and then there was kind of one quiet moment where I shoved my noise-canceling headphones in my ears so I could comfortably watch it. It was so loud.
It was floor-shakingly loud. You were up in the gold section, which is a little bit further away from the front speakers, but we were right there in the middle.
But we got the back speakers.
Oh, and they've got lots of them. There's dozens. There's speakers all over the place. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly loud and pretty dumb as well. Mm. As films go, Immortals was a bit of a disappointment, I have to say, because they've been touting it as a follow-up to or in the zone of 300. And Johnny, you and I went to see 300 a few years ago at the Embassy Theatre, and we really enjoyed it.
I loved it. I think the thing,
and not in a in a totally heterosexual way.
I think the difference between the two, well, there are a lot of differences, obviously, but the essential difference was that seemed to have a sense of humour, and this was very po-faced and
wasn't it
a bit grumpy.
Yes.
And yeah. I think that this fantasy gets let down a lot by that, you know.
Yeah. And Kaylee.
And they're just, I felt, because in 300, I didn't see it, but all my girlfriends were like, you have to see it. There's so many short man skirts and so many pecs. It's amazing. And I wasn't really
painted on abs as well.
Abs in Africa.
But,
it was great.
Yeah,
was
in Immortals, I didn't really feel like there's any star power drawing me in to really be like, ooh, yes, great.
You do have the lovely Mickey Rourke playing Hyperion, of course. And John Hurt as a Zeus in disguise.
Yeah, so there are a few people there taking their paycheck gigs, and Mickey Rourke, all of that wrestling obviously paid off, because he certainly looked, for a guy who's been through the ringer, he certainly looks like he could put himself about a bit. And, you know, there's probably a lot of stuntman action, but it looked like he was doing quite a lot of that, the heavy lifting and the violence there for himself. I had a real problem, but apart from those two, a real problem with lack of star power, as you say. Theseus, the central character, the only sort of the human who's supposed to save the Greeks from Mickey Rourke. He's the new Superman.
Oh, is he? Is he an Australian actor?
I think that was an English actor trying to play a classical, doing a sort of classical accent. Henry Cavill is his name, and that doesn't necessarily bode well for charisma in tights, does it? A little bit later on next year.
Well, if you can't have charisma with your shirt off.
Well, that's
he
right.
He did have a pretty good body, I suppose, in a sexual way, as I've just said. and I suppose the other thing that reminded me was the Clash of the Titans. Well, this was actually the Clash of the Titans, because there were Titans actually in it.
That's right, the Titans were in it, and no Kraken.
No Kraken.
There's some major problems. The screening that I was at, it was a very busy screening, and there were lots of boys at it wanting to check out the violence that they'd been promised from 300, etc. And there's one love scene in it, and the whole cinema giggled.
It was a little uncomfortable, wasn't it?
It was just very badly done, wasn't it? I mean, it was just designed to make teenage boys feel awkward. I think
they
look
awkward themselves. I mean, the whole thing, you know, she's the Oracle, isn't she? And she's supposed to be pure and virginal.
That's right. And she changes her mind. One look at him with his shirt off.
Yeah.
The Oracle.
Because you don't get the visions if you're not still...
No, she's cursed, you see. She's cursed with those visions.
Knowing too much, isn't it?
Bag me an oracle.
So let's see. Two word summaries, rundowns from Kaylee.
Well, mine is bloody, comma, loud.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Johnny, have you got two words for Immortals?
Bit disappointing.
Oh, nice work. Excellent. And mine is noisy embarrassment.
Are you sure this is the right place for you, Dad?
Absolutely.
This
is my mission.
And then out of nowhere, this hand grabbed me, and I looked up, and there was an angel staring down at me.
Well done, Lillian.
No, it wasn't her. It's my first wife.
Please don't tell anyone. They're Frere's mate, my elephant. Thanks, officer.
Oh, my crikey.
So you're not going to call them in?
Police? Good luck, no.
I'm afraid I can't discuss the details of a crime scene, ladies.
Crime scene? How exciting.
That was the great Tony Barry, among a lot of other venerable, esteemed New Zealand actors, in Rest for the Wicked, which is getting quite a wide release, isn't it, Simon? Simon, you've seen it.
Yeah,
what,
I have.
What do you make of it?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that, you know, this is directed by Simon Patterson, who's kind of done this off the shit of his own back. You know, he's really put a lot of time and money into it.
So it's another indie, a little bit like
Mike Riddell from Insatiable Moon.
Insatiable Moon,
yeah, and another similarity they have is that they're just showcasing a lot of older actors, which you don't normally get work.
They certainly don't get television work anymore, do they?
Well, I mean, and that's the charm of this film, is that it's got this great sort of cast of elderly. Well, not what Twilight. I mean, I don't know, what do you describe it as? You know, they're all very
Opposite of Twilight. In the Twilight years.
Yeah. There's enormous amounts of experience, hundreds and hundreds of years of experience. We heard Ian Mune in that trailer. We heard Bruce Allpress.
You got Alona Rogers in there.
Alona Rogers as well.
John Bache,
who's fantastic. Ian Mune. Yeah, John Bache actually it seems to be taking the whole thing pretty seriously, doesn't he? Whereas everybody else is chewing a bit of furniture when they get the chance, but John Bache is like he's the crim and
When would you see a film like this in New Zealand with that range of actors in it? I mean, how often would you see that?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yes, it's really good to see from that point of view.
But what's it about, Simon?
Wow. What's it about? Well, the tagline on it, one of the taglines is, you know, a tale of sex, drugs and mobility scooters. But it's more than that. It's about this character played by Tony Barry, who's sent to a retirement village. His time is up. He's an ex-policeman, and there's another motive. This family's sending him there, but there's also another motive. He wants to catch up with his nemesis, and that's played by John Bache, and he's meant to be an ex sort of crime figure who Tony Barry's trying to hunt down. And it's sort of, so there's a little bit of toing and froing in terms of it goes back into the past and looks at what they were up to in the past when he was trying to track him as a policeman.
Yeah, there's a bit of underbelly going on, isn't
there? There is a bit. Yeah. But then, you know, intermingled with all that, there's this great sort of comedy that's taking place in the retirement village. You know, there's this great seduction scene, or attempted. So, you know, there's a few funny things going on there as well. And there's also a sense of, well, how much of this is real and how much of it is not.
I found it a bit confusing, to be honest. It does
at points lose its way in that respect, but it kind of gets wrapped up all right at the end, I think.
All right, so we've got two words for it, Simon.
Bittersweet comedy.
Yeah, there's a hyphen in there. You get away with that. Yes.
Oh, thank you.
I said simply sweet because I really enjoyed it.
Right.
I thought there was a great attention to detail throughout the film, so and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I really like it when these New Zealand films come along like this, and they actually, you know, there's a sound basis for a good story there. You know, it works to a certain level. I mean, okay, you can be a bit tough on it and say that it fails in some areas, but overall, for me, it worked, and it was really good to see all of those actors kind of on screen.
And it's definitely going to find an audience, isn't it? Because there's an audience for whom television has just left them behind in terms of Sunday night drama or New Zealand drama. Or
it's very ageist, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. New Zealand television seems to be only interested in one market nowadays,
which is strange because the young people probably aren't watching television in the same platform way as older people would.
No, exactly. So for one reason or another, there's an audience being left behind, and they're being invited back to the movies to see their stories. So my two words for it are actually Kiwi Telethon, because it was a little bit like you know, seeing a whole lot of people you know, brought together for one last grandstand. So that was
they might disagree with that.
Oh, I'm sure. And a sequel.
I'm sure the audience may disagree.
Rest for the Wicked 2, I'm sure, is on its way. And so next up, we've got time...
What would the byline be? Watch it before they die.
Time for some news.
Thank you very much, Dan, for that wonderful intro. All right, so first up in the news today, the word legendary gets tossed about a lot these days, but it applies to British director Ken Russell, who passed away yesterday at the age of 84, sadly. Starting in television, he made his first feature in 1964, arguably the finest interpreter of music and cinema, not just classical composers like Mahler, Wagner,
Liszt.
But also The Who's Tommy in 1975, sadly more likely to be remembered by the current generation for an appearance on Celebrity Big Brother than his extraordinary film output. And he was quite a scandalous filmmaker as well.
He was very much so. And he was discovered. He discovered drink and drugs at a fairly early point. And I heard a wonderful story about when he was making a film called The Devils in
Oliver Reed
in the 1970s, and he would turn up for the set so hungover each morning. Not just Ollie Reed, who had a reputation, but Ken Russell as well. He turned up at the set so hungover that he would just the first AD would say, "Well, what's the first shot of the day?" And he would just say, he would just get him to lay 20 metres of track for this long, extended, convoluted tracking shot. And by the time they built the tracking shot, he'd have worked out what his first shot for the day was going to be. And that the partnership with Oliver Reed was one of the great partnerships in British cinema, and I think if this encourages people to go back to Ken Russell's past work, then we hope. But as we discovered at the quiz night, the movie quiz night the other night for the staff of a cinema that we won't mention, there are a lot of young kids who haven't watched a lot of films.
But didn't they have a good time? They had a great time.
They did have a fantastic time.
Fun night that was.
And we're gonna have to start an educational program for them where we try and fill in a few of the movie gaps.
And something about the bar tab. We need to educate them about that as well.
But Dan is available to do your movie quiz.
Oh yes, exactly. If anybody my number, just contact us through cinematica.co.nz.
Yes, and you get Kaylee as a co-host.
Oh yeah, that's right.
All right,
couldn't have done it without you.
Thanks. All right, awards season is getting underway. BAFTA has a special children's award, which is a great idea. And Sunday's night winner of Best Feature was Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, beating out Part 1, Kung Fu Panda 2, and Tangled. Woohoo!
Yep.
Yay. In more Bond news, because we seem to have some every week.
Every week. I think they're being quite clever, aren't they, about releasing bits of information. Keep that going for a year.
That Sherlock Holmes trailer has been on for a year.
I know.
When are we ever going to see it?
January.
Early Jan.
January. In more Bond news, Ben Whishaw, of Perfume fame, has been cast as a very young Q in the new Bond Skyfall. Previous Qs have been the long-standing Desmond Llewellyn and, of course, John Cleese.
Yeah, Ben Whishaw, a very, very fine actor, and as he's so much younger than you would expect a Q to be, I wonder whether that means Q's actually going to have some action.
Yeah, I don't...
What
Q should be old.
Well, with his money penny.
Okay, and for fans of The Tree of Life, Terrence Malick is planning on creating a 6-hour cut of the film.
I'm there already. I'm so there.
You're nude, oiled up, there's a big fire.
Yeah.
And there's you.
There's me and Terry Malick. I have to say that the last Terrence Malick film, The New World, was originally released in a shorter version than the DVD that came out, and I felt that was a film that definitely benefited from being longer, that it finished too quickly. And so that wouldn't surprise me at all that actually his vision for The Tree of Life is actually a much bigger, more all-encompassing.
It's a miniseries. Thing.
But what is it with this year? You've got Melancholia, Tree of Life, Another Earth is like...
A lot of that pseudo-science fiction sort of metaphysical...
Magical realism.
I don't know about you, but I think some people are... A lot of people feeling that the planet is going to hell in a handcart and perhaps our...
You're channeling your grandmother.
perhaps our art is reflecting how people are feeling, Will there be a euro this time next year? Who knows? That's just on one side of it. So I think there's a lot of reasons for people to feel... And, there's always something to worry about, isn't there? Isn't there?
Yes.
Or maybe that's just me.
The sword of Damocles hanging over you perpetually.
Mm.
All right.
And was it time to give something away?
It is.
Ooh. Oh.
Yes. We have some passes for the Iron Lady that we are giving away this week on Cinematica. So thank you for all of your posts and tweets and everything. So I couldn't decide on just, I think we have five passes to give away. And I couldn't decide on five because we got so many today. So I'm going to read them all out. And then I'll let the winners know, and then we can announce the winners next week. Because they're just so good.
It's great. Absolutely. And I think that people, it's really good that people feel that they can contribute to the show and that we're going to feature them. And, you know, they're probably doing a better job of two-word summaries than we are.
It's inspiring. Really.
Fantastic.
We need to hire these people as writers. So Pomo, who is also known as Rebecca McMillan, who's a friend of ours, her two-word review for Breaking Dawn is Vampire Yawn. And Tinker Taylor equals Tom Hardy. So good work on the rhyming and the alliteration, Rebecca. So awesome. Sakura59, which is one of our loyal tweeters. She's wonderful. See her all the time. Two-word Twilight review, Shrieking Girls. The audience found almost everything shriek-worthy. Ouch, my ears. Barnaby HM, two-word review for Drive, which I totally agree with. Ryan Gosling. Hello. And also from Twitter, we have M. Tizard or M. T. Izzard. Not quite sure. Attack the Block, monstrously entertaining.
Oh.
That's a good one.
It's a very good one. And we are very excited here at Cinematica about Attack the Block being released next year. I think the only people that have had a chance to see it in cinemas are people who went to the 24-hour movie marathon in Auckland. It was the centerpiece of that. So I know that some people are very excited about.
What's that about then?
I've seen it.
You've seen it because did you get special attention? Did you get? Was that at conference?
I think it might have been at conference. You know, it's a bit of a blur, but I've seen it. Right. It was at conference, I think.
It's another zombie. Is it a zombie movie or is it an alien?
No, it's an alien movie. And they attack the block.
It's aliens, and it's in the not the projects, but the high-rise flats of London. So it's basically the London kids ganging up against the aliens.
Oh, going back in the kids.
Yeah,
because the police don't even go there. So yeah. the kids are the only last resort. Save the city.
Yep, and it's been touted by people that we have a lot of time for, people like Edgar Wright and what have you. And I think the guy who directed Attack the Block is one of the co-writers of Tintin. So so I think we were all very much looking forward to that in the next year. And so we're very envious of our tweeting friend.
Yes, and speaking of Tintin, nice segue. Stephen Moore on Facebook posted, been pondering my two-word review for The Adventures of Tintin, having started with the rather prosaic mocap merriment, then moved to the esoteric Bond villain. I've settled on the direct quote, blistering barnacles.
Oh, nice work. Nice work, Stephen.
Yes, and also on Facebook, there's a lot of them. Damn, almost done.
Oh, okay.
posted, Tuesday's coming quick, which means we need your two-word reviews. I didn't specify film reviews, so we got two-word reviews for Cinematica.
Ooh, I don't know if I want to know.
Want some ice for that burn, bro.
Drum roll.
Drum roll. Kev Carina says, bloody awesome, with 3 exclamation marks.
Oh, that's a prize. That's a prize. Yeah.
Print it.
Yes, and Janine Stevens says, all in caps, bomb diggity.
Is that good?
I don't know. What is that? What does that mean?
Yes. Oh, my. So from my
is that another Canadian? Is that a Canadian thing?
Is that like something those Mounties would say?
With your house, with your roof.
And my dog. No, bomb diggity is a good thing. It's like a 90s term.
I'm going to teach my kids that.
We'll take it. Excellent. So, have we got enough? Do we have enough prizes for all of those? For all of those entries, or
we don't for all of these entries this week. We have 5 to give away, so we'll have to decide. But then next week, maybe there'll be more prizes.
Yeah. Well, this is it for those of you in the industry who are listening and who have access to things like cool things like baseball caps
and
t-shirts and cinemas. Exactly. Feel free to throw prizes our way because we will.
Throw them out
to distribute them to worthy causes. So the Iron Lady, when does that open, Simon?
26th of December.
It's another box
day. Yeah, box open day.
Right, Meryl Streep as Margaret Thatcher. I have mixed feelings about this. I've seen the trailer and I think that it looks like Meryl Streep's doing a fantastic job impersonating.
I just think of the young ones in Thatcher's Britain. I mean, I can't I don't know. I'm going to find it hard to watch it. To be honest,
I'm a refugee from Thatcher's Britain, so it's going to be deeply traumatic for me, I would expect. So anyway, Boxing Day.
I think she'll do. Yeah, I think she'll pull it off though.
And we'll make sure that our winners get some prizes before then.
And just a big thanks to Hoyts for throwing us those tickets. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Hoyts. And we've got an. You're looking poised there, Kaylee.
I'm just ready. I'm just ready.
You ready for?
I'm ready now.
Ready for the next thing?
Coiled like a panda. Is that right?
T'es nouveau?
Moi, on est arrivé hier.
Moi, c'est Lisa. J'habite ici.
Michael. Je m'appelle Michael.
I think we can gather from that little bit of audio that the next film that we're going to be talking about is in French, and it's the only art house film in the show today. Mm-hmm. It's quite a brave release coming this close to Christmas. A genuine art house contender, Tomboy. And who wants to put their hand up for this one? Who's seen it?
I will.
Kaylee,
I will.
Good. Oh, you.
I love this film. It was wonderful. I saw it at Newmarket in Auckland. It was one of the first films I went to in Auckland.
All
first
right.
time I've been to Auckland was for the film festival. So in this film, what happens is Zoe Herdan, she's a new actress on the French scene, quite young. She plays Laure, her and her family move to a new suburb in the summer. She has a younger sister as well. And she has a short haircut, very much a tomboy.
She's only 10 years old, isn't she, the character?
Yes, yeah. Quite young. They move to this new neighborhood and she is mistaken as a boy by the other children in the neighborhood. And so she adopts the name of Michael and decides to become a boy for the summer and ends up kind of starting a fling with the head of the pack, this young girl who's there as well. And so it's this film, all a very, very young cast, aside from the parents who you don't really see very often, about gender politics and, you know, children growing up and, you know, making those decisions.
And identity.
And identity, yes. So I found it an incredibly powerful film. Very, very good. An amazing young cast, most of whom were actually not actors and were brought in to do the film.
So yeah, I really enjoyed it too. And it was a very, not emotionally challenging for a change, but kind of intellectually challenging. It made you think. And I definitely was left pondering what I'd seen after watching that film during the film festival, and I thought it was a very brave move of Rialto to release it, because I know that it's actually going to be a film that's, we're finding it quite hard to describe its qualities, and whether it's going to find an audience or not, I'm not sure, but I want to commend them for actually releasing it, because it would have been an easy film to think was too hard for a New Zealand audience. And I liked it a great deal. And it's deeply challenging and moving.
And really begs the question, you know, when you're watching it kind of, and the big event happens, the real question that I came with is like, if I was a parent, what would I do?
Well, that's right. The other question that I had was, where are these parents? There were a lot of films in the film festival this year that seemed to be about parents just being missing in action, or so focused on their own lives and their own world that their kids were sort of left to run riot. There were quite a lot of films where kids were so obviously needing guidance through the world. And this is another example of Mikhail, Laura, ends up making some choices that, if she'd had decent role models at home that were actually paying attention to her, may have been different. So two words
will be in French, of course, is courageux et émotionnel. So brave and emotional.
Oh, nice work. Mine I think are extremely thoughtful. Yeah, so that's my two words for Tomboy. And we've got one more film to talk about, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Who cares about one single child?
Do you think she's the one kid in the whole world that Santa doesn't care about?
Do you know, Arthur, there is a way.
Well, you're coming too, lad.
Me? On that? Up there? Pulled by them?
Dasher! Dancer!
What are the others called? I could never really remember. But Bambi?
I'm not really good with big animals.
Simon, turn your phone off.
Shall I go and unplug it?
Yes, please. That was a segment of the trailer for the new Aardman animation film, Arthur Christmas. Kaylee.
Yes, speaking of children who need direction and parental love, we have Arthur Christmas.
Yeah, I'm going to come right out and say it. I adored this film, and I wasn't expecting to. The trailers and the promotion for the film, I don't know, I just, partly also not just the promotion of it, but the previous Aardman digital animated film, Flushed Away, I didn't think that much of, and so I was sort of thinking, oh no, this is going to be work. I turned up on Friday thinking it was going to be work, and I was so won over by it. The story is that the job of Santa Claus is passed down from father to son when Santa gets too old and retires, and the current Santa's been doing it for nearly 50 years now, and he's sort of, you know, not really paying attention too much anymore, and his oldest son Steve, played by Hugh Laurie, is basically running the joint and has turned the whole Christmas present delivery situation into a military exercise with millions of elves, no sleigh anymore. It's like a giant spaceship that can travel the world so fast. They've got every present delivery down to just a matter of fractions of a second. And it's very sort of smooth machine. But unfortunately, one child gets missed out, and Arthur, who is a bit of a klutz really, he's the younger son of Santa, he has been kept out of the way because he's such a doofus really, and he's been kept out of the way in the letter answering department, and he's still in love with the idea of Christmas, still in love with the idea of kids getting something from Santa on Christmas morning. And so when he discovers that one present's been missed and one child's been missed, he takes it upon himself with the help of Grand Santa, Santa's dad. They dig the old sleigh out of mothballs. They get the original reindeer out of the stalls, and they go off and they try and deliver this present. And it's a fantastic adventure. That was me ranting. So, Kaylee.
John, did you see it?
No, I haven't, but some of my favourite actors are in it. I'm Jim Broadbent, Bill Nighy.
That's right.
You're our guest reviewer, and you've been sitting in the corner quietly, and I feel quite bad. I'm sitting beside you, and I'm like,
I know. I can't review something I haven't seen. I did see The Immortals. That's the only thing. Did we say what that was about? No, we can't go back.
Does it matter?
Does it matter? No.
Okay. We've moved on.
The times are moving on. So Bill Nighy plays Grand Santa. And Jim Broadbent, the fantastic Jim Broadbent, plays Santa. Hugh Laurie, James McAvoy plays Arthur. And the enormous numbers of fantastic names amongst the many, many elves. I think even Rhys Darby's in there as one of the voices. Robbie Coltrane. There's some fantastic voice cast. But actually what really works is the story. It's a really fantastically well-told story with some great invention. They just stick really doggedly and determinedly to the through line of the story. And so as a result, you can't help but be carried along by whether this quest is going to be fulfilled, and whether the family is going to be brought together, and whether everyone's going to get what they need on Christmas morning. It's just, I adored it, and I've got this feeling that it's actually going to become a bit of a Christmas ritual for me. Christmas Day we'll tune in the Queen's Christmas message on the wireless, and we'll all sit around and listen to that, and then we'll all sit down as a family, and we will watch Arthur Christmas, and we'll probably do that now every Christmas forever.
With your 3D TV, hopefully?
Well, I actually don't think it really needs 3D, no. To be honest.
Is it in 3D?
It is in 3D.
3D and 2D.
Yeah, okay. There are 3D options, but this is one of those films that I really think that it doesn't actually matter. I mean, 3D was kind of cool, and if that's what you're into, then you'll get a kick out of it. But actually, it's the story, the characters, and the vibe of the whole thing that really carries it through. And Kaylee, you saw this just this afternoon.
Yes, I did. I came into the studio drying my eyes.
I can vouch for that. She was very emotional. Yeah.
Not in an upsetting way. Just like it's so happy and you're so like overwhelmed by the joy of Christmas.
The happy tears. Aren't you? You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll cheer. Yeah. And,
it's nice to see a Christmas film that's not just cynically trying to cash in and make money, isn't it?
No, it was really nice.
Genuinely good
story. I really enjoyed it. And that's the thing I like about Aardman Studios and their animations. For me, there always seems to be a really good story. Mm. You know, the animation is great, and I love their style, and they are releasing a film in the future that is back with that hand-done style, which would be great and very exciting.
Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, and it actually reminded me of Pixar in terms of that quality and that attention to detail and that idea that there's a brand that has to be protected, you know, that the Aardman brand is a brand that people trust and that they're not going to put something out. And they've won me back over after Flushed Away was a little bit, I felt below their standards. I think they've won me back now. And now whenever I see that Aardman's name on a film, then I think we can trust it again. So
wrong trousers.
Well, that's right. Yeah, and I think there is some more Wallace and Gromit coming down the pipe. So
and there is, of course, a Wallace and Gromit homage. There is a little miniature sheep that you have to find in Arthur Christmas. There was so much
detail. It really would be worth looking at again, actually, just for the inside jokes there inside the mission control for Christmas. There are so many screens and they've all got jokes on them. If you pause it when you buy the video at home, you pause it and I'm sure you'll find jokes all over the screen. I just it's one of my favorite films of the year. I can't recommend it highly enough. My two words, jingle bells.
Really?
Yeah.
You thought long and hard about that.
I did. Because I hate Christmas and it's still November.
Bah, humbug.
And the
carols are in the shops already.
Not just that, mince pies are in the supermarkets. Mm. I mean, you've had a Christmas party.
Oh, yeah, get it out of the way fast.
Don't hang around.
And here we are in November. I think it actually should be illegal that people can even mention the word Christmas outside of December.
It does ask the question, though, I mean, you know, why did it come out in November?
Well, to avoid the likes
crush.
Of Tintin, yeah, to avoid the crush.
I'd like to see it hang in there and play through that. It'd be great.
I hope so, and I hope that the word of mouth is and what we're doing for it this afternoon and this evening, I hope that encourages people to go and check it out, because I do know a lot of people who were put off a little bit by the marketing and by the trailering, and they were hanging out waiting for Tintin. And no, I can't say that yet. I can't do that. I can't discuss
Tintin at this time.
No. But we will at some future point. Kaylee, your two words.
My two-word review is True Christmas.
That's what you were trying to say with Jingle Bells, weren't you?
Yeah, that's
right. There's a little twinkle in my eye.
No more bar humbuggery from this
emotional.
Side of the table. That's the end of our show. That's the last of our reviews. And just to send us on our way, I actually went to iTunes and spent some money this afternoon in a Christmassy sort of way.
True, I saw the moths fly out of his wallet.
serenading us out of the show, here is Bill Nighy from the soundtrack of Arthur Christmas and his version of I should warn you, he is in character as Grand Santa here, and his version of Make Someone Happy.
It's so important to make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. Make just one heart the heart you sing to one smile that cheers you, one face that lights when it nears you, one girl you're everything to. Fame, if you win it, comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer.
The wonderful Bill Nighy, Make Someone Happy. That's the closing credits music, theme music for Arthur Christmas. That's the end of our show, Cinematica podcast, for one more week. Next week on the show, we're going to be going Irish dancing with Jig. And it's the battle of the domestic pet animals with Red Dog versus Puss in Boots. So we'll be talking about that next week. Simon, you've got a week off, haven't you?
I have, yep.
Who gave you the week off? Who approved that?
Executive decision. I'm away. So
so we'll be getting another guest reviewer in to take your chair for next week. Kaylee, you'll be back next week, won't you?
Indeed I will.
Johnny, unfortunately, this is you're going to be flying back to Auckland soon. We'll be, love to have you back on the show at some point in the future.
It's great being here. I've contributed nothing, but I like to think just my mere presence can make us feel all a bit more Christmassy.
Yes, indeed. That's, I think our Christmas special, we should have you back for
that. Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be really good.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us feedback at the iTunes Store. Ratings and reviews, all fantastically useful in terms of helping people discover the show. Contact us via Twitter at CinematicaCast is our handle. The website is cinematica.co.nz. The show is executive produced by Simon Wherry, produced, engineered and edited by me, Dan Slevin, the news editor and weather girl is Kaylee Carruthers. The theme music at the beginning of the show was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And it's good night from me, Dan Slevin.
Good night from me, Simon.
And good night from me, Kaylee Carruthers.
Oh, and good night from me, John. And I don't remember the weather.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.